are now listening to the Paul McGuire Report. This is Paul McGuire. On today's edition of the Paul McGuire Report, I want to talk about the secrets of power, understanding, knowledge, and wisdom. And why I title it Secrets is because there are many things that we know from science and physics and biology and genetics and the different fields of understanding that we have in society, global society, American society, etc. But, you know, even in the bodies of knowledge that we claim to know, because our nation and other nations, especially throughout Europe, the European Union and nations associated with it, all of these nations, especially Great Britain and America, all of these nations were the beneficiaries of incredible scientific knowledge. So science, or the scientific method, was essentially energized in Great Britain among the secret societies and the elite. And so they discovered, in many cases, principles of physics and mathematics and biology and genetics. They discovered many things that were true, but because they rejected, deliberately and consciously rejected, other truths and accepted the truths that they rejected as being true, and as such ended up accepting falsehoods and lies and errors, it was a double-edged sword. On one hand, you had truth, which set people free. On the other hand, you had a pollution and a degradation of that truth due to the rejection of truth and the widespread acceptance of error. A case in point would be the Huxleys that I talk about a lot. Aldous Huxley, author of Brave New World, and an advocate of the scientific dictatorship. His brother Julian Huxley, one of the heads of the UN, specifically UNESCO, which is the global educational film, video, books, literature division of the United Nations. And also Julian Huxley was the official father of transhumanism. So the Huxleys were geniuses in many ways, but because they were such militant rejectors of a higher level truth than the truth that they discovered, and by that I mean because they, in their quest for the scientific method, their quest for the scientific method was based on the nature and rules of the scientific method. And as many of you know, the scientific method is simply the thesis or the belief that anything that's true, anything that's real, anything that's scientifically valid or scientifically verifiable, any of those things can only be discovered in an environment which puts up at the highest level things like the sensory information of, obviously, your senses, your physical senses. So you can't prove anything in their scientific method unless you have solid scientific evidence, and solid scientific evidence can ultimately only be acquired through your senses. So you perceive visually, you hear with your auditory senses, you have your tactile or touch senses, and you have your other physical senses. If you can verify something on the basis of physical senses, then that is classified as something that is true, scientifically valid, and real. Now, there was a great deal of deception and lies and dishonesty that flowed along with the collective so-called scientific inquiry mindset of the Huxleys and the other higher level British intellectuals who were the so-called scientific and economic ruling class of Great Britain. They violated their own axiom. Even though going back in time before Huxley, you had people like Sir Francis Bacon, Sir John Dee, who were the most powerful and influential advisors for the British Empire and for Queen Elizabeth. Queen Elizabeth semi-secretly took anything that Sir Francis Bacon told her. She took it as of such importance that she implemented it. And she did the same thing with the teachings and words of Sir John Dee. Now, Sir Francis Bacon, as we've discussed before in my earlier books, like A Prophecy of the Future of America, Volume 1 and 2, The Day the Dollar Died, Power from on High, The Greatest Battle for the Hearts and Minds of Mankind in the History of the World. I do a deep dive of research into all of this, and I write it out for you in a fast-moving, entertaining, enjoyable, it's kind of an awkward word, but you have fun reading it, even though it's intense. So we have to remember, and I document all this in my books that I named and some of the others, which you can still get at a discount. And let me tell you now that it is vitally important for you to acquire and possess actual physically printed books that are bound, that you can, you know, keep for yourselves and pass on to other people. Because, listen, the time is going to come when the internet will be totally censored, and that time is coming quickly. And the time is going to come when all of the information, for example, that I've written down in books and others have written down in books, that will not be available. It won't be sold on the Amazons and the other things. They will all be eventually censored and blacklisted. You need to come to grips with that. That's the way totalitarianism always goes. It always has gone that way. So, in contradiction to the thinking of many people, if you're storing books, like my books or whatever, digitally, that's fine. That's your prerogative. I really don't care. What I do care about, that many people get exposed to it. But if you're giving away your master copy, which would be a printed copy, it's not going to be available in the future. And anybody's books, because the scenarios that played out in every totalitarian dictatorship in the last 170 years, you see book banning and book burning as an essential process in the growth and emergence of those totalitarian dictatorships. So if you want to keep truth and pass truth along, then you're going to want to be able to, let's just put it this way. No, let's not put it anyway. Let's just say it the way it is. You're going to need to hide your paper copy, paper printed books. Because if you try to access it, that information on any computer, it will automatically signal people that whose job is to interface with artificially intelligent electronic surveillance. And so you'll have artificial intelligence functioning as a global economic sensor. And anything that doesn't fit into their agenda, truth is irrelevant to them. They want total power, total surveillance, total suppression. So anything that is written, anything that is spoken that contradicts their mantra, so to speak, they will wipe out. And you see this warned about in the novels written by secular authors, including Aldous Huxley, including in 1984, where the dictatorships are burning and banning books like crazy because they don't want their subservient populations to have access to the truth. When you computerize or you make digital that kind of information, then anybody knows if you're looking at it because it'll send off signals. Okay, also in Ray Bradbury's science fiction novel, Fahrenheit 451? I always get it mixed up with Michael Moore's documentary, and it's totally different. Ray Bradbury was a class act as a sci-fi author, and in Fahrenheit 451, which you may have seen, in a movie or television special, or you may have read it, remember that in that futuristic society portrayed by Bradbury, the purpose of the fire department is not to put out fires if a fire breaks out somewhere. In this dystopian futuristic society or futuristic dictatorship, the new purpose of the fire department is if any books are discovered, they have to be immediately seized, then put in a pile, and then set on fire and totally burned into ashes. So the purpose of this, the fire department in the future, is to seize books if they can find them. That's the key. If they can find them. If they find that you have hidden books of any kind, like the Bible, they... the fire department will immediately seize them and burn all your books, and you will have committed a huge crime, a thought crime. So Ray Bradbury warns of that kind of society, and he didn't write the book because he was just in a delusional state of paranoid consciousness. He wrote it because was a smart guy, and he perceived on the basis of his knowledge of history and his logical analytical abilities that this is where we're going as a society. You better wake up. Even Aldous Huxley and George Orwell, who wrote 1984, Aldous Huxley, who wrote Brave New World, in both of those dystopian futuristic dictatorships, the books are seized, the books are banned, the books are destroyed, and the population is not allowed to read or have or see or view or keep books of any kind. They are destroyed, and you could be severely punished, brainwashed, and God knows what else, if you dare to... break that rule about books. Now remember, in all of these societies, these futuristic societies, you can be digitally monitored through electromagnetic frequencies. Your computer is an open book already. Anything you store or write about or think about that ends up being displayed digitally on a computer or a laptop or a cell phone or anything electronic or digital, if that's where you think you're going to successfully hide your Bible in the future, or Christian books or whatever, no, that's not the way it's going to happen. Though anybody who's relying on a computer and digital technology to use as a hiding place is foolish. You need to hide books in places that are impossible to find. And books have an advantage in that, except for potentially in the future, a QR code, or potentially in the future, if there's some kind of print on the cover of the book or the interior of the book that can contain an even tiny or microscopic metallic technology that's embedded in the pages or embedded in the cover, then... the book, only then does the book become vulnerable to being discovered, because it can be electronically discovered. But if you remove that, you don't have to destroy the cover or the back cover or anything, but if you remove that tiny or even sometimes microscopic digital mini chip of whatever kind, then no machine, no device can use an electronic beam to discover whether or not or where a book is hidden, because paper-bound books without any metallic chip in them of any kind are if you use your head, are next to impossible to uncover unless someone goes to amazing lengths. So that's a heads up for the future. Okay, so the goal is, what is the goal? If you want to keep people in slavery, if you want to make people your captive and perform slave labor for you, if you want to implement a totalitarian dictatorship, you have to overpower and then dominate the masses of people by every available means. So you need to exercise mind control. You need to have military assets. You need to have a full spectrum of technologies to dominate and enslave any people in order for them to be subservient in whatever kind of dictatorship you were trying to build. So that's important. Now, back to the scientific method. So all of science, going back to the late 1500s, and then the 1600s, science was built on atheistic ideas, humanistic ideas, transhumanist ideas, and the scientific method. Sir Francis Bacon was the father of the scientific method and praised for being the father of the scientific method. But the lie in history, the lie that the elite have sown into your history books, the lies that the elite have sown into the knowledge of history is this. These men like Sir Francis Bacon and Sir John Dee, on one hand, publicly acted as if they were hardcore secular humanists and atheists. But secretly and privately, the reality is that these powerful intellectual so-called scientific leaders secretly were high-level members of occult secret societies, and they were practitioners of all kinds of occultic, Luciferian, allegedly supernatural activities. So they played a game. They knew that their real power didn't just come from the, quote, scientific method. That's a falsehood that your children and you have been, and me, and we've been indoctrinated in the lies that real power comes purely from science. And that's false, because the science that is taught today is a false science, because it divorces itself from the other massive historical bodies of science that today we call the occult. In ancient times, like ancient Egypt, and if Atlantis, the super civilization, allegedly did exist, it was not just built on science, it was built on supernatural knowledge and science. The same thing with ancient Babylon, the British Empire, Mayan, Incan civilizations, Sumerian, Chaldean civilizations. Their category of science was linked to the category of the supernatural and the occult. They didn't see them as separate things. They saw them as one continuum. So this is what is perpetually hidden from the masses, because the masses are indoctrinated and educated. The primary purpose of the education and indoctrination, once you get past whatever training role you may have to go through to qualify for, like being a teacher or being a policeman or being an accountant or being in business management or whatever, once you move beyond that and you get into other subject matter, it's there where the heavy duty manipulation occurs, where you indoctrinate, program, and brainwash the student, whether it's an adult student or a child student. You hypnotically program them to believe in a false past history and a false past historical reality. Why would you do that? You desperately want to keep them powerless. You want to keep them inferior. You want to make sure that you can, on a continual basis, enslave them so they can perform their duties as slaves for you as an individual or for your empire or for your dictatorship. So the goal of education requires indoctrination for the purpose of training their brains to serve you as slaves. This is one of the great secrets. It's an open secret. This is one of the greatest open secrets of history. You look at the movie Ten Commandments, or you read the biblical account of the Ten Commandments, it's all about the people being brainwashed into believing the lie that the Pharaoh and his family represent God kings, that they are not mere men and women, but the Pharaoh is a God king with supernatural powers, and he and his family have been supernaturally chosen by the gods to make the Pharaoh the God king of the Egyptian Empire. And so when the people slaved away for Pharaoh, they were indoctrinated to believe that by slaving away their lives for Pharaoh, that was the same thing as worshiping Pharaoh as God and worshiping Pharaoh's gods, their act of slavery. And that is what I have called the Pharaoh God King system, and I write about it in my books, The Day the Dollar Died and the other books. And it's important that you understand that, because the Pharaoh God King system tells us exactly what it is by definition through its architecture, its primary architectural symbol that declares to you if you have eyes to see. I mean, if you have eyes to see what's plainly in front of you, the great pyramids of Egypt, the pyramid is a living, organic energy system. It's a manifestation. It's a manifestation of the mystery Babylon occult religious system, and the pyramid is an occult symbol that represents the mystery Babylon occult religious system. And the occult religious system of ancient Egypt, it's from that system that the Masons and Freemasons adopted their mystery Babylon occult belief system that they are applying in modern times. It came from their study and the passing on of the mystery Babylon system, which began in ancient Babylon at the time of the building of the Tower of Babel, and then it was replicated by the Pharaoh and the Egyptian God King system. Now, the Tower of Babylon, and most people don't know this, and I've written about it in my books, we give you documentation. The Tower of Babylon was a pyramid-like structure building. It was a massive pyramidical structure-like building. So it was made, the Tower of Babylon, or the Tower of Babel, was made in a pyramid shape. The architectural term for a structure made in a pyramid shape, architecturally, that's called a ziggurat. The ziggurat is a fancy name for a pyramid-shaped giant architectural structure. So the Tower of Babel was an ancient pyramid-shaped structure. The Pharaoh God-King system of Egypt built countless numbers of giant pyramids, because the giant pyramids were built to replicate the pyramid structure of Mystery Babylon, originated in ancient Babylon. And so when you get to Egypt, they're simply making a mirror copy of the pyramid structure of the Tower of Babel. And so the pyramids are a way of communicating that it's the same system. Maybe they changed the names of the gods and they changed that some of the rituals, but the essential occultic truths are the same. And that is why you take these Egyptian occult symbols, you take these ancient Babylonian occult symbols, and they have been passed down from generation to generation for thousands of years. They were given to the globalist elite secretly, and that would be people like Sir Francis Bacon, who was head of the Rosicrucians, and a global occult secret society, which later was renamed as the Illuminati. And Sir John Dee and Sir Francis Bacon were both high-level occultists. And because they channeled, because they communicated directly in secret occultic rituals, they communicated directly with spirit guides who were actually fallen angels, also known as the Enochian or Enochian fallen angels, written about in the Book of Enoch. And the Enochian angels, these were the angels that the first 200 angels that descended on Mount Hermon and gave mankind advanced sciences, mathematics, technology, advanced biology, highly advanced and futuristic and even science fiction-like technologies and sciences were given to human beings on Mount Hermon. And when the fallen angels, the Enochian angels, descended upon Mount Hermon, they physically desired to have physical relations with human women. And they did. and the human women mated with the fallen angels, the Enochian angels, and produced a DNA genetic offspring known as the Nephilim or the Rephaim. But also, the fallen angels gave mankind back then this highly advanced futuristic technology and sciences. And we see that exchange between mankind and the fallen angels going on after Mount Hermon, before Mount Hermon. We see the fallen angels giving mankind ancient technologies right before the flood, then again after the flood, during the time of the Egyptian pharaoh god-king system, during the time of the system of ancient Babylon, and it was secretly passed on from generation to generation through what are called Illuminati bloodline families to this present hour. So at this present hour, the reason we have 1% of the population of planet Earth ruling over the other 99% of the human population, the reason we have just 1% of the human population, also known as the globalist elite or the Luciferian elite, the reason they control 99% of all the wealth and assets of planet Earth is because they have been the recipients of this secret occult knowledge contained in Mystery Babylon. They have been trained and educated in how to access and operate in supernatural and multi-dimensional realities. Now, unless you understand that, and you're going to have to pay a price to understand it, you're going to have to read, think, pray, meditate, and study, or you will never grasp what I just said, because it's set up to hide it from you. So the only way you can break through the barriers that they have erected to keep you from personally acquiring this high-level knowledge, remember, knowledge is power. You have to break through their barriers, because they've erected the barriers as a firewall to keep the masses of people on planet Earth in ignorance and darkness, and they want to keep them powerless so they can continue to be slaves. So, at the time of Sir Francis Bacon and Sir John Dee, they were accessing supernatural power, just like the fallen angels, the Enochian fallen angels, were communicating to men and women on Mount Hermon and giving them advanced technology and sciences. Well, in the same way, Sir Francis Bacon, head of the Rosicrucians, Sir John Dee, an occultist, Sir Francis Bacon, an occultist, they learned the fallen angel Enochian language. They learned the language of the fallen angels described in the Book of Enoch, the fallen angels that descended on Mount Hermon. They learned that language. And so Sir Francis Bacon and Sir John Dee, who were hardcore occultists and big-time scientists, were in regular communication speaking to and listening to and getting from the Enochian angels supernatural wisdom, multi-dimensional knowledge, supernatural knowledge and wisdom. And just like they gave this to the human inhabitants of Mount Hermon, these Enochian angels were downloading to Sir Francis Bacon and Sir John Dee all kinds of supernatural information that gave Queen Elizabeth and gave the British Empire an enormous power, economic and scientific advantage over the rest of the human race. So what happened was, these Enochian angels told Sir Francis Bacon, who was head of the Rosicrucians, which later became the Illuminati, the Enochian angels instructed Sir Francis Bacon to instruct Queen Elizabeth that the British Empire needed to sail across the ocean and recapture or capture the Americas, and to turn America into the New World Order. So through occult power, through secret knowledge, through communication with the fallen angels, Sir Francis Bacon implemented a plan that began in the early 1600s, where he invaded the Americas, and they planted among the Pilgrim and Puritan colonies by Bible-believing Christians, there were these counterfeit Christian colonies set up by men and women who were not really Bible-believing Christians. They pretended to be Bible-believing Christians, but in reality, they were hardcore occultists. They were communicating with spirit guides, demons, and fallen angels. And they implemented and they seeded, just like the Pilgrims and Puritans implemented and seeded a biblical worldview for their lives in America, and God honored that, but it was also a spiritual battle going on. So on one hand, we have God blessing the prayers and the obedience of the Pilgrims and Puritans, and America is prospered, and the American dream becomes viable. But on the other hand, you have the penetration and infiltration of secret occult societies, like the Rosicrucians and Sir Francis Bacon, etc., who are busy in a secret way ramping up America to be the global head of a global new world order. And once again, the pyramidical structure, the ziggurat, is openly displayed due to men like Sir Francis Bacon's teachings. So when you see that pyramid on the back of the U.S. dollar, you see at the base of the pyramid the words in Latin written Nuvos Ordo Seclorum, which means New Order of the Ages or New World Order of the Ages. Then you see the occult pyramid-shaped structure, which is unfinished at the top. And then about three-quarters of the way up the occult pyramid, you see the all-seeing eye of Horos or Lucifer as part of the pyramid. And that symbolizes the all-seeing eye, the all-seeing illumination of the Illumined Ones, the occultists, and the pyramid represents the New World Order. It even says that on the basis of the pyramid, where it says Nuvos Ordo Seclorum, which means New World Order of the Ages. Then, that was on the left-hand side on the back of the back of the pyramid. Then on the right-hand side of the back of the U.S. dollar is a bird that many people think is an eagle representing America. But that comes out of the teaching of Sir Francis Bacon, and it is not an eagle. It's a phoenix. And the phoenix bird is a legendary occult bird which flies and then is burned up in flames until it just becomes a pile of ashes. This is occult symbolism. But then, because of supernatural power, the occultic ashes of the phoenix, and the phoenix bird is a symbol of the New World Order, it rises from the ashes again as the phoenix, symbolizing a narrative. And the occult narrative is that the phoenix prospers and rises. It could well mean America, but then it's burnt up, it's destroyed. But then from the ashes, it's reborn, a counterfeit of the born-again experience. It's reborn, and it rises from the ashes through occult power to become the phoenix again, who is the head of the globalist New World Order. So the occultists, like Sir Francis Bacon, believe that America was destined to become, the secret occult destiny of America was to become the very head of the New World Order in the last days. And that's the purpose of the pyramidal structures. That's the purpose of the all-seeing eye of Lucifer, the purpose of the words in Latin, Nuvos Ordo Seclorum, which means New World Order of the Ages. Their secret plan for America, which, by the way, is still locked in place on a secret level among the hidden ruling elite of America and the European Union and the world. America was planned to be the head of the New World Order. Now, I don't know what actually will happen in the last days, but that's the belief of the occultists. And so when you're trying to figure out everything that's happening in the United States of America, you cannot understand any of it, including the economic system, the political system, the scientific system, the educational system. All of these systems are under the control of secret occultists who are being financed and directed by the secret globalist elite or the secret Luciferian elite that represent just 1% of the population, but this occult elite that only represents 1% of the population controls 99% of all the wealth and power. And that's where America is today. And that's why you see the Republican Party and the Democratic Party, for the most part, functioning secretly in agreement, functioning secretly hand in hand, and why it seems like, for the most part, or at least a great deal of the time, no matter who gets elected, whether it's a Republican or Democrat, the same New World Order agenda is still being pushed. There's never a return to the original vision from the Pilgrims and Puritans. There's never a taking a serious stand for the Constitution and the Bill of Rights. That basically, not all the time, but much of the time, it's plodding along to the agenda of the secret globalist elite that secretly control our nation, secretly control education, science, the law, government, the Supreme Court, the media, the entertainment industry, big pharma, the food industry. Every power center that there is under the rulership and control of this secret occult elite, many who are Masons or Freemasons. And by the way, that's also why you see, when you visit Washington, D.C., you see blatantly out in the open architectural monuments, statues, symbols, quotes, architecture that literally, if you understand what these symbols mean, it's literally shouting at you. It's literally speaking to you visually and in an auditory sense. It's lit up, and it's the loudness of the message is it roars at you. You see the Washington Monument, which is a large phallic symbol that goes all the way back to Mystery Babylon, ancient Babylon at the time of Nimrod and the Tower of Babel. And the beginning, the theological and legendary origins of ancient Babylon. The Semiramis, the wife of Nimrod, who was allegedly either a prostitute or a madam of a whorehouse. And Semiramis is the first woman that represents the whore of Babylon. She has all the attributes because Nimrod's wife was a whore. And she, by many historical accounts, allegedly killed her husband, Nimrod, and had to make up a lie in order to hide her crime from the people of Babylon. So she told them that Semiramis died and rose into the heavens, and Semiramis became the sun god Ra. So every time you look up at the sun, you're looking at Ra or Semiramis. And this is somewhat graphic, so I'm going to give you a five. I'll count to five as a heads up to turn it down, and then I'll give you a five when we're going back to it. So here's the beginning of your warning to turn down the sound if you have young children. One, two, three, four, five. Okay. So this part here will be it will be offensive to young children, so you should have the thing, the whatever technology you're listening to it on, turn it down. Semiramis, remember, she's a prostitute, possibly a madam of a house of prostitution. Nimrod becomes Nimrod's wife, and she kills Nimrod and covers her tracks by saying Nimrod rose into the sky and became Ra, the sun god. By the way, who was also worshipped in ancient Egypt. So what happened was, she, because she was sexually promiscuous, before she killed Nimrod, she was regularly having affairs, and so she got she was made pregnant by one of her lovers during the time period in terms of her being pregnant and how many months she would be pregnant until the baby was actually born. Well, the timing was messed up, because what the timing said to everybody around her was that there was no way that Nimrod could have been the father of her baby. There was no way that Nimrod could have impregnated her, because if you counted the amount of time until Nimrod you know, was supposedly pulled into the heavens to become Ra, the sun god, that wouldn't have given enough time. It chronologically would have been impossible for Nimrod to have impregnated his wife. So that would have proven her guilty before the people of committing adultery, of fornicating with some man, and she would have faced the wrath of the people because it would have been blatantly obvious to them that she was fooling around and got pregnant, and that she was not faithful to Nimrod because of the conflicting time schedules of her being pregnant and then when she would give birth, and the chronology behind Nimrod rising into to become the sun god. So she goes before the people. This woman is very dark but very resourceful. She goes before the people of ancient Babylon, and this part will be offensive to some of you, so you want to turn the audio down. And she holds up a phallic symbol object before the people of Babylon. Okay? So I'm going to be as delicate as possible, but the phallic symbol object has a common name even in our society. I'm not going to use that most common name simply because I'm trying to respect your sensitivities. But I will have to say enough so it becomes a logical explanation or so you can understand what her con game was all about. So essentially, she held up before the people a phallic-shaped sex toy. And she said, and I don't know what word she used, but she said before the people of ancient Babylon, holding up this phallic symbol sex toy, that she was using it on herself. Okay, you got the picture. I don't need to explain it to you. And somehow it was supernaturally infused with the ability to impregnate her with Nimrod's baby. And so what she was trying to do is basically saying that her child was the supernatural product. She became supernaturally pregnant by using a phallic-shaped sex toy on herself. And while performing that act on herself, she became supernaturally pregnant with the seed of Ra. Okay? And then, of course, she did give birth to that child, and that child was named Tammuz. But the point is, that was all a lie she made up. I mean, it's a graphic lie, but that's all a lie. Okay, so that's the end of the adult segment. And I'm going to count to five to come back. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Okay. So we now know. This is the beginning, by the way. This isn't just some, I don't know, X-rated tale. This is the beginning of the theological foundation of the occult religion known as Mystery Babylon. Okay? And so, the way she became supernaturally pregnant, etc. Now, you know, remember, these people believed that Semiramis was a goddess to begin with. They believed totally that Nimrod rose into the sky and became Ra, the sun god. So in their cultural context, it was not a big leap to believe Semiramis' story. So this is the beginning of the Mystery Babylon religion that began in ancient Babylon. It's this same Mystery Babylon religion which is recorded in the Book of Revelation, where Mystery Babylon, the great harlot, is fornicating with all the powerful elite and the wealthiest men in the world. So the Mystery Babylon, the great harlot, that spirit, that satanic Luciferian female satanic system, is explained further in the Book of Revelation. So it's past the secrets of this Mystery Babylon religion find themselves in every occult religion going back to the time of ancient Babylon to the present moment. And so the Masons, the Illuminati, the Rosicrucians, and the other occult secret societies, the reason they exercise such a strong grip in the building and the architecture of for example, Washington, D.C., the Freemasons and Masons hired the famous Masonic architect, Pierre Lafont, to be the architect that to plan Washington, D.C., the streets, the buildings, so on and so forth. They were all done by a Mason and Freemason, Pierre Lafont. And so that Washington Monument, through the eyes or lens of a Freemason or an occultist, the Washington Monument is simply the return of the phallic symbol used by Semiramis in ancient Babylon. So every time you see an obvious phallic symbol used in architecture, used in buildings, etc., that phallic symbol is a occultic exact, you know, it's an occultic symbol and a replica of the phallic object that Semiramis used. That's part of their secret occult theology. And so the Washington Monument is a phallic symbol, an occultic phallic symbol that goes directly back to how Semiramis claims she got impregnated from Semiramis, the head of, not Semiramis, Semiramis is the wife of Nimrod, the head of ancient mystery Babylon. So the Freemasons and everybody, they know all this. And it's not an accident that the phallic symbol-shaped Washington Monument faces directly to the U.S. Capitol dome, which in occultic architecture, the dome of Washington, D.C., represents the womb. So it's the dome, the U.S. Capitol, is an occult womb-shaped building. And it's not an accident that the phallic symbol faces the womb-shaped building known as the Washington Monument. What they're saying, among other things, in the positioning of the Washington Monument in juxtaposition to the U.S. Capitol dome is, they're saying over again through the language of architecture that Mystery Babylon and the alleged supernatural impregnation of Semiramis through a phallic symbol is one of the foundations of the theology, the occult theology of Freemasonry and Masonry and the religion of Mystery Babylon. So the phallic symbol facing the womb is making the overt suggestion, if you understand the symbolism, it's a reminder to the person observing these architectural monuments. It's a teaching reminder in symbolic form of one of the primary belief systems of Mystery Babylon occult religion, which is that a phallic symbol object impregnated Semiramis, the womb of Semiramis. And it is also an occultic message which represents a counterfeit message to the virgin birth of Jesus Christ and the fact that Mary was a virgin and was supernaturally but also purely impregnated by God, and Jesus Christ is the direct product of a holy and sanctified virgin birth, which is the true account of creation. So the actual messaging of the phallic symbol in juxtaposition with the womb of the U.S. dome, it's a messaging that is energized by the spirit of Lucifer and the Antichrist, because it is declaring the opposite. It is, first of all, it is devaluing the legitimate and authentic virgin birth of Jesus from the Virgin Mary. It's attacking that biblical message, and it is exalting a lie and a satanic falsehood regarding a supernatural impregnation of Semiramis, who was allegedly using a phallic-shaped object to impregnate herself, and thus she implies that she supernaturally impregnated and all that is a satanic lie, openly on display. So what does that tell us? It tells us that something rotten is in Denmark. And don't ask me what that expression means, because I have no idea. I've just heard it. But something is amiss, okay? Because on one hand, much of the capital and the whole American system masquerades as if it's a Judeo-Christian biblical system, and it is to a significant degree, but it is not completely a biblical system. It has been defiled and invaded and conquered to whatever degree by this satanic Luciferian mystery Babylon system, which operates on all kinds of names. And by the way, the other counterfeit of Lucifer is the creation of a new world order, the one world economic system, the one world religion, and the one world government, now rebranded and renamed by the globalist elite as the Great Reset. And we are living in a time of the culmination where all these prophecies and all these and this entire spiritual battle is moving towards its final endpoint. You are and you and I are living in that time period. So we need to be prepared. We need to have knowledge, which is power, and we need to have power from on high. You're listening to the Paul McGuire Report. We'll be back in just a moment. You are now listening to the Paul McGuire Report. This is Paul McGuire. Okay, we gave you a fast review of the spiritual and supernatural foundations of the greatest spiritual battle in the history of mankind that you and I are presently involved in. And by the way, when I say presently involved in, that implies that each one of us has a call from God, a call by God, to be involved in this. We're not supposed to be, sitting in the stands of a football game or sitting in the seat of a movie theater, okay? That's not what we were called to do. Okay, I want to touch on a few things highlight exactly where we are in space, time, and history. So, all right. Well, one thing that we have to continually remind ourselves of in the mass indoctrination of students and adults in the educational system and media, there's the constant duality of scientists, so-called professionals, economists, educators, biologists, and so on and so forth, always pretending to be strong science-oriented people and always pretending to be secular humanists and always pretending to be champions of Darwin's theory of evolution, which has never been proven. And Darwin's theory of evolution states that mankind is the product of a random chance series of random events over 200 million plus years. So mankind, according to the evolutionist people, mankind is not the product of an intelligent supreme being who divinely created God according to a specific blueprint that he alone developed, and that there is a reason for every man and woman's life, and that's one of the reasons that every one of us has our own unique and different DNA code, and it's the reason that there exists things such as an absolute right and an absolute wrong. Conversely, evolutionary theory and Charles Darwin perpetuate the lie that might makes right, that the fittest deserve to survive, which is simply a rejection of the biblical teaching of love of thy neighbor as thyself and replacing it with an animalistic belief system or an animalistic philosophy. Essentially, they're teaching and preaching kill or be killed. And they believe that if you have the power, the force, the will, the money, the military, then you possess the might, and whatever you declare, whatever you do, automatically becomes right, because there is no absolute or God-given right or wrong. Your might alone is all that is needed to make something right. So that means you literally have the biological evolutionary right to oppress people, enslave people, torture people, slaughter people, rape people, child sex trafficking, Holocaust, burning people in ovens, destroying people's bodies with different biological mechanisms, and everything's perfectly okay because you have the power to do it, and the very fact that you have the evolutionary Darwinian right to do something, in other words, you have the power to do it, therefore, because you have the power to do it, it's perfectly right, it's perfectly okay. This is the belief of the Nazis, Adolf Hitler, the belief of people like the communist dictator Lenin, the communist dictator Chairman Mao. They all believed in this might makes right brutality and only the fittest shall survive mentality, which again is a philosophy sowed by the spirit of Antichrist, and it is a thought system that produces horrific acts of evil, and it is diametrically opposed to the written word of God, which is based and centered on love and forgiveness and peace and self-sacrifice and the agape or Christ-like love of Jesus Christ. They don't roll together. Okay, but these people hide. They hide their true nature. So what you have is that you have a public merger for social engineering purposes of the occult, science, and technology. Now, I'm reading to you from my book, The Day the Dollar Died. And I talk about, I'm just going to read selected sentences out of my book. In a strategic effort to establish a scientific elite who would rule our society, the Fabian socialists, they were from England, set out to attack the Bible, the family, and Christian morality. Fabian socialist Lord Bertrand Russell, he was a big-time intellectual and best-selling author in England. And he wrote this, one of his best-selling books that he wrote was called Why I Am Not a Christian. So he hated Christianity. And he was a member of the Frankfurt School. The Frankfurt School is the same group of socialist intellectual professors who created critical race theory to function as a Trojan horse, and they created the German theological schools of higher criticism also to function as a Trojan horse. You'll never learn that in a Christian seminary, Christian college, Christian university, because sadly, and I don't mean this to be cute, but sadly to say, they drank the Kool-Aid a long time ago, and the effects are obvious. So Bertrand Russell joined up with the Frankfurt School in an effort to implement mass social engineering. In 1951, Bertrand Russell wrote a book, The Impact of Science on Society, and this is an exact quote from Bertrand Russell, quote, "Of these, the most influential is what I call education. Religion plays a part, though a diminishing one. The press, the cinema, and the radio play an increasing part. It may be hoped that in time anybody will be able to persuade anybody of anything if he can catch the patient young and is provided by the state with money and equipment. The subject," he's talking about human beings, "the subject will make great strides when it is taken up by scientists under a scientific dictatorship." That's what we live under. Wake up, folks. "The social psychologists of the future will have a number of classes of school children on whom they will try different methods of producing an unshakable conviction that snow is black. Various results will soon be arrived at. First," and if you think teaching kids that snow is black is like, oh, that's impossible, well, they're teaching kids that men are women and women are men. There's no real difference. Bertrand Russell writes first that the influence of the home is destructive. The globalists hate homeschooling, having children spend time in their homes with their parents. Second, that not much can be done unless indoctrination begins before the age of 10. Why do you think they're always offering to give you free daycare and always offering to give you free daycare at a younger and younger age? Now, the reason that you would even be tempted by free daycare is because they've already brainwashed you into believing that that both the husband and the wife have to work, even if they don't have to work. And I'm not condemning you if you have to work, but their enthusiasm in offering you free daycare. Okay? Their motive is not altruistic. They're not. It's not because they're so kind and compassionate. They're offering you free daycare because they believe the younger that they have opportunity to control your kids' brains and development, the more successful their brainwashing will be. So the reason they want your kids at the youngest age, the same thing with sex education. This is Bertrand Russell, quote, "Unless indoctrination begins before the age of 10, it's not going to be as successful as it could be." So that's why they want to keep giving your kids all these classes at a younger and younger age. It's so they can begin indoctrinating them at a younger and younger age and take your kids away from you in their most formative years. Then Bertrand Russell talks about another method of scientific programming. Verses set to music and repeatedly intoned are very effective. So music with repetitive messages. Fourth, that the opinion that snow is white must be held to show a morbid taste for eccentricity. So you ramp up the level of brainwashing to such a high degree that anybody who dares to say out loud publicly that snow is white is mocked, ridiculed, and basically decimated socially and experiences total social rejection. So social engineering requires a kind of psychological punishment if you dare to tell the truth. If you dare to say, well, the snow is white, you are punished so that you'll conform. So you go along with the lie and you say what they want you to say, even though it's a lie. Oh, of course, snow is black. There was a time in my life working with different corporations where I attended numerous corporate meetings where the price tag for promotion and favor was that you had to literally say snow's black, okay, out loud. And what I mean by that is that whatever the corporate chieftain said, no matter how ridiculous, no matter how absurd, you had to repeat exactly what they said if you wanted any hope of promotion or salary increase or whatever. And of course, that's one of the reasons I got out of that system as fast as I could. I mean, I just couldn't go to work and attend a corporate board meeting in which the unspoken ground rules were that you had to agree upon whatever the lie of the day was in order to get promoted. And then Bertrand Russell says, once this psychological technique has been perfected, every government that has been in charge of education for a generation will be able to control its subjects securely without the needs of armies or police. The populace will not be allowed to know how its convictions were generated. That is what is happening in America now. And then I write, essentially Russell was saying that through this scientific mind control, it would be possible for new generations to call good evil and evil good. I continue to write in my book, The Day the Dollar Died. So many so-called Christian leaders are completely naive and asleep to what has happened, is happening, and is going to happen. There has been an all-out siege planned with military precision against God, His Word, the family, and a biblical worldview. Our present-day world is not the product of some random chance. The fact that in this next generation we may produce only 4% of our children to be true Christians is not an accident. The hour is very late, but there is still time to rise from our slumber. With God, all things are possible. And then I immediately follow up where I talk about in the year 1881, the Fabian Socialist Society was originally called the Fellowship of New Life. Far from simply being a socialist and humanistic organization, the Fabian Socialists, like the communists and Nazis, had occultic roots, which they never tell you. The group held Kingdom Now ideas, and its first president was the Christian leader Brooke Westcott. Around the same time period, Arthur Balfour and members of the Rothschild banking family belonged to the Society of the Elect. The Fabian Socialist Society was formed immediately after formation of the Occultic Society for Psychic Research in 1882. Brooke Westcott and Fenton Hort, along with Arthur Balfour, were involved in both organizations. The Fabian Socialists were connected to both occultic organizations and Rothschild interests. the Fabians were originally, quote, Christian socialists. At that time, the Freemasons called these Christian socialists the New Evangelicals. Their emphasis was not on preaching the gospel, but building the kingdom of God on earth, which is what the New Evangelicals and members of what is termed the Emergent Church believe. In many respects, the current Emergent Church is a rebirth of the Christian socialists and what the Freemasons called the New Evangelicals. According to an article entitled Spirits in Time magazine, in 1923, an editor from Scientific American, J. Malcolm Bird, went to London where he met with Sir Conan Doyle, the author of Sherlock Holmes, to investigate the claims of William Hope, a photographic medium who, in sittings at the British College of Psychic Science, produced photographs of spirit. According to the Time article, for 40 years, a number of Europe and American elite were involved in supernaturalism. The movement took off from the British Society of Psychic Research, organized in 1882. Here are some of the prominent men involved: Lord Balfour, Sir Oliver Lodge, Sir Alfred Russel Wallace. Sir Alfred Russel Wallace was one of the wealthy families that started the Jehovah's Witnesses. Lord Balfour, Sir Oliver Lodge, F. W. H. Myers, Sir William Crookes, Professor Henry Sedgwick, Roger Hodgkin, Thomas Edison, Sir James Barry, Conan Doyle, on and on. Many distinguished scientists from prestigious universities. Frederick Myers was involved in the Society of Psychic Research, along with others, helped to found Stanford University. In 1912, Colonel House, that's Colonel Mandel House, was advising President Woodrow Wilson. They dreamed of a one-world government, the kind of government envisioned by occultists and the Fabian socialists who grew out of the occultic movement. The League of Nations, which was a forerunner of the United Nations, was birthed out of these ideas. The League of Nations was formed when Arthur Balfour, presiding as England's foreign secretary, despite the globalist and occultic ideas of these men, God, who is sovereign and in control of all things, allowed these men to fulfill Bible prophecy. In 1919, President Wilson met in France with the Rothschilds, presiding over the Versailles Peace Conference. Some of the attendees included Alfred Milner, Colonel House, Edmund D. Rothschild, who used their wealth and influence to begin the Jewish resettlement of Israel, which was called Palestine, Lord Arthur Balfour, who created the Balfour Declaration of 1917, which was instrumental in the reformation of Israel in 1948. The Society of Psychic Research had an influence on Stanford University through founders and professors who were members and sympathizers in the occult group. One of the major goals of Stanford Research Institute, SRI, is the application of science and technology for knowledge, commerce, prosperity, and peace. Is this a merger of an occult connection to the dream of one world government and the development of surveillance, mind control, banking technologies that will lead us to a cashless society? The end game of these technologies is a microchip implant. Now, I'm not going to continue. You can read the rest of this in my book, The Day the Dollar Died. But the critical message and the critical historical truth here is that you have the indoctrination lie, which is taught in education, media, entertainment, and the major institutions, which is that the elite believe in science and rationalism and logic and reason, and that's the most important thing. But in reality, that's just a Trojan horse. That's just a mask they wear. Who they really are secretly behind the masquerade of being scientists and logical and rational, who they really are and who they really always have been and who they are now, is behind the masquerade of being, you know, just follow the science and the rest of that garbage. They're hardcore occultists. They communicate with spirit guides. They communicate with spirits or demons. They converse with spirits or demons. And they get their knowledge and their game plan and their directions and their technology and their science from their interaction with a hierarchy of fallen angels. So in understanding the nature of what's going on in our world and society today, it's absolutely mandatory that we educate ourselves to the degree that we understand the true nature of the spiritual battle we're involved in. We're not just, you know, engaged in a battle with people. As the Bible says, our fight is not against, you know, people and organizations, but against principalities, against powers, against the dark unseen forces of wickedness in heavenly places or the spiritual world. You see, our fight ultimately is against demons and hierarchies of demons and fallen angels. So, in order to win the spiritual battle, obviously, this is a no-brainer, this is a slam dunk, obviously, we have to stop fighting the battle on the wrong battlefield. If we're fighting purely on the battlefield of physical realm and purely on the battlefield of logic and technology and rationalism and science, etc., etc., if that's the entirety of our warfare, we are going to be decimated. It's not that those things in their proper perspective don't have a vital importance, because they do. Knowledge is power. But if you ignore the other side of the picture, which is their total reliance on supernatural psychic power, conversing with demons and fallen angels, actually receiving by reaching into the invisible realm, actually transporting hidden technologies, secret sciences, and then using them to enslave mankind. You can't just ignore that. You have to, through having a renewed mind, you have to understand the totality of the war. It's both natural and spiritual. And therefore, in order to win this spiritual war, we have to learn how to, through knowledge, be victorious both in the physical world realm and in the spiritual realm. And that is what I have devoted all of my books to, teaching this in the fastest way possible to as many people as possible. And I need you to help me do this. I need you to help me distribute this information far and wide and as fast as possible if we are to have the opportunity to save our nation before it's too late. So I ask you, I challenge you as your brother in Christ, to go before the Lord and ask the Lord how much you can donate or contribute to Paul McGuire Ministries and Paradise Mountain Church, how you can pray for us and be more effective in your prayer life, and how you can help watch our back as we are trying to right now watch your back. And don't give in to this defeatist mentality, which is a lie, that everything is lost. Everything is not lost, or we wouldn't even be talking right now. God bless you. This is Paul McGuire. Visit paulmcguire.us. That's paulmcguire.us. And together, in the love of the Lord Jesus Christ, we can and shall and will prevail. God bless you. This is Paul McGuire.